What's going on, everybody? It's Ron Brown, LMT, the People's Fitness Professional, alongside my co-host,
Mikey Fever.
And this is a New Yorker's perspective with the Dr. Paul Dyer in the building.
The doctor.
How you guys doing? Happy Friday, brothers.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday. Thank you for coming on again. It's always a pleasure to see you, to hear you. Thanks again for joining us and believing in us, really, you know.
You know, I get a lot of great comments when people watch the show that I'm on, and then what I enjoy is that people watch the show that you guys are doing. And they love the way you are presenting, you know, from people who've done this video stuff and who do the podcast. This is different. This feels different. And I love the dialogue, and because I love communication and conversation. So I love the dialogue. But it's not just a dialogue. Someone says, man, I love the way you guys feed off each other. And they're like, how do you guys do that? And I said, you know, and I've said this before today in an earlier session, it's about listening small. It's not about trying to influence someone to believe in something. It's about being part of something that you can conversate over so you can have the dialogue. And that's where learning takes place. That's where creativity takes place. That's where advancement takes place. And that's how advanced society has always been advancing. It's not just the power over system. It's how we belong together to have a belief of moving forward. It's not a system, because once you start putting in systems, then that means it's a controlled gear. Like you think of a bicycle system, it's gears and chains and wheels. Well, if you take away the gears and the chains, is it not a system anymore? No, it is. It's just that it's broken and it doesn't go anywhere. But if you have a belief and an idea to grow, which is, I think, from science and from physics, then you allow for things to bang off each other to have that creative flow where the universe was created. That's how the universe was created. It was banging off each other to pull from each other, to collect the materials from each other so we can grow as a universe and to expand. It was never about creating a system. And I think that's what your shows are doing. It's creating a universe to expand and not just be like, well, this is how this is and that's how it is. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
Because it leaves no room for growth.
Appreciate it. Gratitude.
Well put. Well put, brother. So now we're going to go into emotional education. Now you have a slide presentation up there for the public to see.
Yep. I do. So let's just go right into it. It's just a bit simple. So here, what we're all watching for, and I hope, let's see if everyone can see my little red bundle here. Can you guys see that?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. So what are we looking at here? These are all the everyone can read it, and I'll give you times for people to look at it. And why I particularly pick this slide is because everything here has a lot to do with our senses. And I'll do that again because we talked about this the last show. It's how we are taking things in and then how it gets transformed into a chemical compound of information to an action. I'm not going to go over what all of these are, but I do want to leave this here because, as you see, the major part, it's not so much where we talk about here and this part of the area where it's the frontal lobe, and then we have the occipital back here. We're talking about the small things that are taking place that is going on in here. And that's where our pleasure center is. That is where our senses start to, they compute all in here. Our amygdala is down in here. You can see it. Most of the stuff that you see here, all of this stuff, if it gets damaged, we have what you call retardations. We have seizures. We have a lot of disruptive behaviors because all these have a function on behavior, right? All of these have a function on behavior. And all these do have what they have input on the chemical of what's being produced. All these things that you see around this line here, they get their information through the exterior of how we receive things. So that's the most important. So the next here, right? We have the, so as you can see here, it's a nose. One of the largest, the most strongest sense we have is our sense of smell. Which is why we're able to smell danger. We can smell our partner. We have senses. This is what you call the strongest and the oldest part of our senses. Now, historically, in our ancient times, we have what you call 360 senses. Imagine that. We have 360 senses. Now, those are different things on our fingers, you know, how we feel touch, how we feel heat. We have sensory action throughout all of our bodies. So how come after so many hundreds of years, we have only come down to the five? What did we do with the 260 to 255 or the 360 of them when we have so many senses that we never we stop using or we stop what you call understanding of how we use. So we take in our smell, and that's right here, what you call the olfactory nerves. The smell comes in, and if we go back to, let's see, our last slide, it comes in right through here, right? As that comes in, it goes right into this part of the brain is where it starts to have its informational change. Those things, these dendrites and these nerve cells that comes in here starts to feel what you call pressure. What is the pressure? The pressure doesn't come from the outside. That's why when we do what you call our breathing exercises in through our nose, out through our mouth, and this is why I put this up here, because if you are excitable and you are breathing in through your mouth, look at all the information it bypasses. Can you see that?
Yes, sir.
I see that.
As it comes through the mouth, look at the information it bypasses.
Mm-hmm.
It bypasses all of these factors right up in here, which helps our brain that starts to change its senses down into our sensory perception. With that, here's your brain just on sound alone. If you could see again, where's the mouth? The mouth is not even involved, is it?
No.
There's a reason for that, because things come through. We always say this is our third eye. We've heard people talk about our third eye, and that's right here, right? But it's really, that's how we are receiving things, is through all this part of the brain that goes from the nose to the ears, all the way up and around, right? Again, I'll leave this on here, and this is just a sound. You know, you have a motor cortex, we have a prefrontal cortex, you have all these things here. We have the nasal accumbens, amygdala, we have the hippocampus, we have all these. I'm just reading what's on the screen, and I know people can read, but why did I put this on here? So we have smell and we have sound, and you look at how it's being introduced into our brain. And again, let's go back to where it's all going, right? In this center part, It's not going in any other part. It comes down to what you call the central command system. So if it's coming down to our central command system, it's just simple. The motor cortex, you don't have to know anything about the brain. That involves movement. You can see it says movement while dancing, right? But the motor cortex, it's all movement. So, yes, it has here your brain on sound, but the motor cortex has everything to do with movement. So just take a disruption in your smell and how you are hearing the sound. It disrupts your physical movement. I'll say that again. How you are hearing the sound, how you are smelling, it disrupts your physical movement. So when people jump because they hear a sound that they're afraid of, the body isn't afraid, the brain isn't afraid, the mind is afraid. That's what causes you to jump. That's what triggers the body to jump. Not the brain, but how the mind told the brain to produce a chemical for your external action.
That's the brain complex.
Right? Yeah. Here's the other thing. The prefrontal cortex, I've mentioned this before in the other shows, it controls behavior and expression and decision-making. Controls behavior, expression, and decision-making just from your perception of sound and smell through the senses. So a person can mind control other people because they're giving them what they believe they should have, which controls is their behavior and expression. So when we talk about emotional intelligence, and that's why I put emotional education. If you're not educated on how things are acting in your body, you become the emotional robot for which someone else can control. So just know the education of how things are. Do you have to be what I am and study and do all this? No, but that's why I'm here, is to help you so you can ask the question. So you can say, okay, Dr. Dyer, okay, Dr. P. Okay, so what you're telling me is that when my homeboy or when my friend throws something at me, I shouldn't react? No. Be careful. Your reaction is caused by what? Your mental capacity of believing that he was trying to harm you? Where did you get that information from? You had to come up with that information and then transpose it for your mind to say, he's trying to harm me. So now it kicks off a chemical response that I'm going to react, right? That's where the cortex comes in. It's behavior, controls behavior. Who is controlling the behavior? Is it your mind of how you believe that the person who threw something at you is causing harm? Now we can start to peer off into, is it trauma triggered? Is it informational triggered? Is it my perception triggered? Right? The hippocampus is about memories. The hippocampus is about stored memories. Now, memory is a false. It's always false. Memories are never true. It's how you are putting in the information of what your memory is going to recall. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I mean, you said that last time.
So, but now I want to hear how it sits, right? So you see how this hippocampus sits right in here?
Yep.
That hippocampus is what destroys the amygdala, which sits right next to it. These guys are playground friends. One, the amygdala brings the ball. The hippocampus asks, can I play? That's it. If the amygdala never brought the ball, the hippocampus wouldn't know what to do. They're close related. And then you see how this cerebellum down here, emotional reaction, that's that danger part. Right? And that's why it's so close to the brainstem. We talked about that brainstem before, right?
Yeah, the reptilian brain.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Dye, you mentioned earlier, right? People are being controlled either by their mind or could be the outside influence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't the science fall in the same category as far as like neural language programming, NLP, or hypnosis?
Yes. So we are very clumsy about our language. You know, all existence have its own language, and we don't have a universal language. And I was saying this earlier today in a conversation I was having. The universal language is love. I don't care how many places I've been on this planet. I know when someone says they care for you. I don't know what they're saying, but it's something in there. It's not so much in their eyes or how they say it. There's a feeling of it. Our universal language is math, and it is vibration, and it is frequency. It is waveform. It's very cumbersome to try to come up with the words from different spaces and places of people, but it's related through the heart math, right? And that's how we understand what you're saying is how I'm feeling it. It's not what I would like to feel. I may not know you from anything. I was going to say, I don't know you from Adam, but that's not true because I do know atoms, and atoms are formed anyway. And that's my own little science geek. But we do know each other when we reach out through our hearts to touch one another. Only through our mental perceptions and how we are filtering things through all these other avenues and how they're disrupting all these other issues is how we're getting our chemical information, but our perception falls outside of that. Our mental process falls outside of that because we're not taking in pure information. We're taking in what you call filtered information. So that so we can get into why we filter. So here's now we coming down. So now we know that this is coming right down our spine. And we know that's where the brainstem comes with breathing and activation stuff. So here comes into the spine. And this is just what you call the emotional spine. Most of the people that sees up here, the principal, the 33rd, the C7. Wow, we can go that with between religion and all this other stuff. But I'm going to stick with the science, right? The science. You have up here, you have the spine. And as you come down, we can get into why is the top of the spine the 33rd? And then I'm a Mason, so I know why the top of the spine is the 33rd. But then you come down, and then where things are affecting you in signal form, if you're feeling pain down here in your lower, your mid-back, that's where this is. Your kundalini, the process of all thing origin through your body that comes from your birthing canal up into your head. If you're having pain in there, maybe you're not circulating right. Also, these have different information. Freedom, harmony, similarities, polarities, all these things have meanings, and they absolutely have a positive and a negative. We can get into all these things and what is the negative of them and what's the positive of them. But all these are affected by coming from here between your breathing mechanism, between how your brain is associating with all the information and the chemistry, between right here, how you're receiving things through your smell, through the, we call that, the third eye, right? Because if we go into another thing, right in here is where that pituitary gland is.
Right.
That's where that pituitary gland is.
What, pineal gland, they call it?
The pineal gland.
The pineal right. gland and the pituitary gland are close.
Yes.
Yeah.
So all that starts to trigger all this information that the spine kicks off. Do I have another thing? So here it is. So then you see where the amygdala is. If we go back and we overlay this, right? And then we have that hippocampus, right? Remember, the amygdala brings the ball. The hippocampus asks, can I play? Mm-hmm. Right? And then you see how that pituitary gland, that little small gland right in there,
mm-hmm.
that changes a lot of function of action and movement and posture of who we are. And then you have that pineal gland, which is going to be right in here. Do I have another? And then we get down to this vagus nerve. Now this guy, oh my goodness, I love this vagus nerve. It's the largest nerve in the body. You can see where it starts from. And you can see how far it extends all the way down to our reproduction system. See that?
Yeah.
See how it connects to everything we call a life? The liver, the spleen, the kidney, everything, the heart, the stomach. I mean, everything. I mean, I'm not going to keep reading. I'll just leave it up here. And that's our vagus nerve. A vagus nerve, it is the cop highway. It's the highway that only emergency uses, that it can get to something quite fast and very fluid without hesitation. What if they had bad information? What if a cop is chasing someone they believe that they should be catching, and they get way down here to the kidney, and it's not the correct one? They end up disrupting the kidney, which causes anger, because anger is built through the kidney. The liver is what gives you hostility. That's why when people drink, they become hostile, because the liver's damaged.
Mm-hmm. This is also what is said in traditional Chinese medicine.
Correct. But it's been said throughout the Egyptian medicine too, to the comedic sciences. It's been said for just forever. It's just, you know, they used to call it the magical arts or whatever. But it's been said since the Persians, or it's been said in the deserts of life. It's just been taught. We just now put into what you call our English science words. So let's see here. So again, you have, let's go back here. You have the auditory cortex, which analyzes tones, right? What tones do I hear? I love you. It analyzes the tone of your voice, but it gets perceived by the mind. You didn't really mean that. The auditory cortex doesn't have a meaning. Does that make sense? It is just the tones of the sound. So who gives the tones its meanings? It's not the brain. It's your mind. And how was the mind developed? It was probably from your environment. It was more likely from things outside of you more than inside of you.
That's deep. That's like some kind of, safe to say, some kind of Morse code. How the brain picks up the receptors, takes those pulses, and it processes them. It's like the same way we view light. You know,
right.
My corneal and the light, you know, it's processed in the atoms, is what gives it shape. And our mind would say that's what it is. It'll process it and tell us, all right, this is the shape of an apple. You see an apple or a circle, whatever the case may be.
If I had to think of many slides, if you put them all together, this is probably one of my favorites. It's because the vagus nerve has so much travel. The way it connects things so fast. And then we say, well, Dr. P, well, how can we help control our emotions and our thinking. And we say it simply is regulating your breath. It's not just simple as slow breathing, but it's types of breathing. You know, there's many types of significant types of breathing that activate certain things for certain purposes. And we've been doing this for the martial sciences for, again, thousands of years, of how to activate certain motions and principles with movement. If we go back to our movement, what controls movement is our motor cortex. And if our motor cortex is the one that controls movement, then how do we get our sensory perception in? This is why, if you've seen those great movies where the blind person is still able to see or feel things in a room, it's because it's coming through this type of sensory perception that it has. Places in action has a smell to it. It has a feel to it. We're often, what we say, we're often blinded by the things we see. We're often blinded by the things we see.
So being that we're, the way we react to things or the way we respond to things, way we hear things, see things, it comes from our own mind's programming. Now, how do we reprogram the mind? Are you saying do we focus on, we use breathing techniques along with anything else? Do you have any other suggestions?
So I do. When you, what you're trying to do is to slow down the information of the mind and tear its information and check it. I've used this before. Check it like it's getting ready to go into a club. Like, what are you doing here? Who did you come see? How long are you going to stay? Ask that question. Like, where'd you come from? Why are you coming this way? You know, ask yourself those questions in the slow breathing techniques. Because if it just rushes right in, you're never gonna catch that process until it tears up your club, right? The club is your internal mind. It starts tearing things up and you're going to be like, who let that clown in here? You did. And you throwing them out doesn't mean they left poison inside your club. So now you either have to clean out your club, which if we use this metaphorically, you can't just get a new building. Our journey isn't built that way. So we have to take everything out of the club because I don't know what you left behind. And then I have to clean it and put it back in because I don't know what you left. And when we clean it, we're not just hosing it down. We are actually touching it with our sensory cortex. We're making sure that I'm creating what's in my mind, not what you left behind with your poison, but what I want in. That takes slowing yourself down in thought and in process. That's the breathing technique. You can slow breathe all you want, but if you're not slowing down what's coming in and checking it to see where did this inception of thought process comes from.
Now, let me ask, being that we're both martial artists, and of course you would know about breathing katas. Now, what are breathing katas? Breathing katas, I would assume, is like completely scientific, right?
Yes.
So what experience have you had with breathing katas, and do you know the history around breathing katas in the physiology behind it?
I am blessed and fortunate enough to study with these amazing people in the mountains and in China and Japan, and to really understand the types of breathing techniques. I know of 300 breathing techniques. I am dedicated and practicing about 120 of them, but I know of 300, and 120 of them has now taken, because I can breathe There's breathing techniques when you're holding your sick child. There's breathing techniques when you're holding your lover. There's breathing techniques when you're at work and you want to concentrate. There's breathing techniques when you're walking up a stairs. There's breathing techniques when you're walking down the stairs. Why? Because you're using two different factions of muscles as you go up, as you're going down. So there's different breathing techniques. There's breathing techniques as you are having protection of your body through sound. There's breathing techniques when you're having personal protection through weather. I've meditated in minus 30 degree weather with just a shirt, with a shirt on and shorts. There's breathing techniques because that's a breathing technique. I've had breathing techniques when I've been in 140 degree temperature with a coat on and cool my body. There's breathing techniques to slow down blood flow. We've learned to do that when we have gunshots. There are tons of specific breathing techniques that you can do to help different functions of your body. I hope I explained the science of it and the physiologically of it. So yes, there are tons of breathing. When people say they teach Tai Chi, I kind of blows my mind because in each movement of each breathing kata, you're moving certain energies from one area of the body, from the kidneys to the lungs, from the lungs to the spleen. Those are different breathing techniques. They're just not all one circulatory breathing technique. They're just not. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So what about like traditional like Japanese forms, Okinawan forms?
The Americans have never really been taught the breathing techniques because the teachers that learn the forms, who are good at the forms, never got taught the breathing techniques. So that's where the Americans have been misguided and lost. They learned a lot of the physical part of it, but they didn't learn the breathing techniques of it. So, and that's just because there's no fault. It's not a fault of anyone. It's just they either would not trust it as a student, or they were not taught because their teacher didn't trust them, because it's a whole separate thing. And in the Western world, it just takes too long. I don't know how many, you know, in the Western world, people won't go to a class for an hour to get something out of it. This takes more than an hour of a day to learn, to be, to listen, to watch, to be around your teacher, to watch how they move. And say, sir, Sifu, sensei, why was your nose flaring when you were reaching for this, but yet your belly dropped and rolled in and out?
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, now in the fitness industry, but I would say for the past maybe 10 or more years, maybe 10 or more years. Diaphragmatic breathing has been popularized.
Yes. Well, it's which is fascinating because diaphragmatic breathing has been around since Singer Sang. Hmm. Right? Diaphragmatic breathing has been around since Singer Sang. So why is it important now? It's been around forever. Singers sing through the diaphragm. They hold. There's certain notes that their pitches are done through their diaphragmatic breathing. That's an easy one.
Right. Well, the science behind it, from what I understand, is that diaphragmatic breathing, obviously sends you more oxygen.
Correct.
Oxygen to the brain. And from, of course, with more oxygen to the brain, that's more of a benefit for the practitioner, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why I wanted to talk about more of the physiology behind it. So as you showed on the slide, the breathing basically stimulates the olfactory bulb, it said?
In correct. There?
And then that sends signals to the brain and more of the center of the brain where you have the emotions and things like that and things of that nature. So I could see how the breathing would help with emotions and movement and, you know, just motor control in general. Uh-huh.
So I'll give you one of the things. When I was working at the Olympic Training Center, I helped a sprinter bypass all of his emotional factors to fire his muscles only in certain parts of his legs because of the type of sprinter he was. Which made him that much quicker off the block.
I have a question.
Now, go ahead. But like, he still had to work on his takeoff. He still had to work on his head placement. He still had to work on his shoulder shift. But just getting him to fire the different quad muscles that it needs to come out of the block, man, he thought his whole body was on fire. He was like, he was so mind blown. He was like, oh, snap, doc. I said, that's just the beginning. Now, be careful, because there's different techniques as you're going down. You can't get into that right now, because it's going to throw your stride completely off, because he couldn't stop thinking about it.
I have a question. Okay, Mike. But for the listeners and viewers, somebody who doesn't have an idea of this science, right?
Yeah.
What if they want to learn breathing exercises for like anxiety or stress?
Mike, you got to bring yourself closer to the mic.
What if somebody, you know, this is for the viewers and listeners, those who don't have an idea of this science, right? What if somebody wants to learn the science of breathing to deal with anxiety and stress? What would you recommend?
So, I do recommend for them to reach out to the show. I do. Now, why is that? Your stress level at work is a different breathing technique than your stress level because your kid just got shot. Your stress level, because you're hoping to get a career advancement, is different than your stress level than you not being able to pay for, you know, food. Because it affects the body differently. It affects where in the body differently. It affects the organs differently. It affects the spine differently. So the breathing technique is different.
Gotcha.
So I wish I could sell you a pill and say, if you take three of these and breathe this way, all your stress levels will go away. I would never do that as a scientist. Now, just calming down, diaphragmatic breathing, what Mr. Brown was talking about, helps a lot. Just slow yourself down helps a lot. It really does. Closing your eyes, trying to get rid of those sensory, auditory, sensory perceptions that's going on, that's firing all over the place. It helps a lot. So that's the simple thing. It helps a lot. But to be specific of how to heal it and clear it, there is specific techniques.
Okay. So, Mike, I don't know if you're good. You're good now.
There's a lot of things he said. I'm processing, you know, when he said about how anger, you know, affects the body. You know, I read that when somebody becomes angry, I believe their kidneys or their liver secrete some kind of fluid that causes your cholesterol to shoot up.
That's the liver.
It has to lubricate your muscles, and you know, in a time when your adrenaline is rushing. So
that's are what you talking about cortisol?
Yeah.
No, he's not talking about cortisol. He's actually talking about secretion that the liver does produce. That if when you're angry, that's why when you are a strong study of the science of combat, that your receptors that you have to turn off so you don't secrete certain chemical things from your organs because it would wear you out. If a person who's upset with me and I hit them a certain way in a certain part of their body was shut down because they have already activated those enzymes from that liver. So the body reacts and it shuts you down. Now, did I shut down your body? No, you just gave me the opportunity because of your hostility. And how can I tell you hostility? The way your body formed into combat through your physiological experience, through your physiological appearance, the way your ears peel back. Your body has a natural sense of, I'm getting ready for combat. Your lips become thin. Your nose become flared. Your pupils become dilated.
That's true. If you study animals, you see them do that as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You're, on certain people's skin color, their skin, their hand color changes.
So, I mean, there's a different breathing technique for shooting as well. I just wanted to say that.
Oh, yeah. Well. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So to just to go back to the martial arts thing, because I'm interested in that. So, you know, like you said that the Americans weren't given the true keys, if you will, for lack of a better term, for the breathing katas. And it wasn't of their fault. And it wasn't the fault of the Japanese or Okinawans either. But from what I learned from like Goju, right, they have something called sentient breathing kata. And the way the brothers breathe is like it's like a so that's nothing.
No, it is something.
Okay.
They just gave you the basics of it, right? They gave you your toddler shoes.
Okay.
So it's still everything. There's still a strong thing about it because you take someone who doesn't know how to breathe strongly, man. That's how weak they are. And you take someone who just know how to do the sentient breathing, and it's, and again, it's through sound, right? It's not just words. It's the way the tongue hits the top of the mouth, the way it activates a different nerve chemistry, the way it's, right? There is a nerve activation to the breath. It's not just the sound. It's the vibration sound that triggers the action. It's all part of it, right? Mm-hmm. That's why it sounds like if you're ever in, it sounds like they sound like they're singing. There's different actions going on for the chemistry of the sound. It's not just, yeah.
Right.
So those are your toddler shoes, and then there's other stuff.
Okay.
This is dope. Okay. I'm learning a lot. This is dope.
Okay. So so the toddler shoes. Now, so me doing like sentient breathing katas, I think in my art from where I learned in American Goju, I don't know how many breathing katas there are exactly, so I don't want to say it, and it's like. Brown, no, this is not that many brown. It's this many. So I'm gonna just say the sentient breathing kata, as far as like how you move your hands, it's more in the center. Mm-hmm. You know, that would also help manipulate whatever's going in the mind as well, because of your description of you explaining what happens in the brain and, you know, how the cerebellum controls the movement. And, you know, it was also another part of the brain I forgot, but, you know, just the movement in the breathing helps reprogram the mind, if you will.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Okay. I got it. So, you know, now with martial arts, in this day and time, everyone's about the UFC and things like that, and they try to like say katas aren't relevant when katas are relevant for this reason right here. I would say one of the reasons.
We say there's a move, and he's a good dear friend of mine, Michael Jamal White, just a lovely man. We just recently got our Grandmaster's rings together. Anyway, there was a movie he put out where he was fighting a UFC person. I think he just recently got out of jail or something like that. And the big guy was like, I need someone to spar with, right? I can't remember the movie. And he says, well, how about that guy? And they're like, no, leave him alone, right? And Michael Jamal White goes into his kata, right? And he's like, whoa, Kung Fu Man, right? And they're teasing him, and he lifts the guy up. So it's that type of that's like a great representation of if you don't know what you're talking about, you know someone who knows what they're doing, they're gonna light you up. The UFC, it's a moneymaker, it's WWE at its best. Great job for them. That's all I'm going to say about that. No disparity with them, but they're producing junk because they need to put fighters in a ring so the animals can watch them fight. It is the Roman things again, right? They're still going to have people for slaughter, and they're still going to have people who are better at slaughtering others, and this is what they're basing it off of.
Raising circuses.
Yeah, and it's fine. It's entertainment. It's great, you know. Whatever, you know.
So the katas in terms of breathing, movement, reprogramming the mind, mm-hmm. is extremely important, I would say.
Correct.
It's funny because when I still know all my katas. When I used to really do my katas, I don't know, after I would finish my katas, I just felt like centered.
Mm-hmm. Because you are, I wonder if I could bring, you're bringing everything back into that sensory here, right? And it's coming down here. That's where the center is. You don't, it's not like you feel set. The reason why you feel centered is because you feel a part of all things. Mm. That's what we have talked about before between emotional balance, physical balance, spiritual balance. There's a balance to all of it. If you're unbalanced on one or the other, you're off center, you're off kilter. And in that, your body alignment is off. Within that, your delivery system is off. In that, your receptors are off. Within that, your filters are off. Within that, your mind's filtering processes are off. With that, clogs the whole body in the emotional education. With that, how do you have intelligence when all your stuff is all off track?
Bingo. So does this fall in line with... Being like you're talking about breathing exercises such as Tai Chi, Akatas, does yoga fall in the same category as that?
Yeah, yoga, you know, I feel I've been in India, but yoga in the Western world, they have like no idea. They have no idea what yoga is. Yoga is one of the, I mean, we call it yoga, but yoga is a different, it means differently, means centered to one, but the act of yoga, there's different types of yoga. That's what even bothers me. It's like, so you study martial arts. They're like, yeah. And they're like, what? Well, there's different types of martial arts. I don't know what you're asking me. I don't know what you're talking about. Yoga is not just one thing. That's like saying, I eat. That's what you're saying about yoga. I eat. You eat what? I eat food. You know how much? Wow. Like, that's what yoga is. There's different types of foods out there. Spices and how it's grown. What yoga is that way too. Yoga isn't what these clowns here in the Western world have done to it with these studios. Exactly. Good for them. happy for them. It helps people. I really do. But they bastardize what yoga really is, just like they bastardize what martial arts has always been. But that's where it comes into capitalism and plutocracy. It starts to go that way. You know what I mean? It's lost what it really is. Just like the sciences, right? They call it the mystical sciences. Well, it's no mystical. They took it away from you because they want to hide it from you, right? It was just a science.
Right. So included in all this is mentalism included, right? Is it safe to say this is kind of like it mirrors the hermetic, you know, vibration, everything else, pattern, once everything's aligned, what goes on with the body, as you show the spinal column, what it represents? Because I heard people who have lower back pain relates to issues with, somebody said, bodily issues, something like that, like certain issues in the back.
It's deep-seated issues, deep unresolved issues in the lower part of the back of the S1, the S2. Yes, unresolved issues.
Oh, thank you. Okay, thank you. Salute.
Okay, now, I mean, that I would say that's thorough as far as social. Social and emotional intelligence. I mean, what's the point of social, emotional, and intelligence if you don't have emotional education?
Exactly.
Emotional education. And through the slides, you demonstrated, you know, you explained thoroughly exactly where everything comes in and how the body reads the information coming in and a solution to it. And the solution is, number one, educate yourself, contact the show, and breathe.
Ask the question.
Yeah.
Because I get it. We have, you know, people that have worked it. People don't have the time I have to do the minutiae things I love to study and the, reading the old texts. And it's just, who does that besides me and very few of us and understanding the science and the physics of it and the biology. I love it though, right? So why not just reach out and say, I need help?
Good. But, you know, with that being said, you gave us a breakdown of the mind, the brain, and everything else, right? What if people take another approach, right? I'm speaking as just a listener. Say they want to, like, decalcify that whole pineal gland and other, you know, pituitary glands and their brain and everything else. How can they go about that from a holistic approach with herbs and everything else?
You know, food again, balance. It's so tough. I'm not a commercial. And
there's no one size fits all.
Yeah.
No, and I would actually be I do feel irresponsible.
Gotcha.
To answer that as simple as possible, except ask for help.
Gotcha.
That's it.
I mean, because I've had the fortune of, I'm not even into cars. I'm not a car guy. To me, you put gas in it and it goes from A to B. But I was down at the NASCAR training center. I was down there helping drivers in emotional science and in physical science. Wow, right? NASCAR. You think these guys just sit in the car and turn left. But talking with the engineers down there of these cars and listening to them talk about millimeters, shaving, the engines, the tubing, all of it. Do you think the nut and the screw has nothing to do with it? They are looking at it going, And I mean, they're shaving it just a little bit, putting it on, putting the engine back together, running it again, and going, nope, let's change that nut again. Nuts, belts, just the thing, right? This has nothing to do with the guy in the car. Right? This is just the car, right? The attention to detail. I was in heaven. The science to detail. And I'm not a car guy, but I understand the science to the detail. That was such a beautiful thing to watch and be a part of. And to talk with those engineers and those chief engineers and how these guys can listen to that car. I mean, just sit there and listen to it for like hours and hear it. That's what we need for everybody on this planet. We need someone to be able to listen to us, to hear us. To say, how can I help you? I hear you're breathing. You're off a little bit. I smell your endorphins. There's something wrong. That's how in tune the human connection can be. Because we do it with our lovers. We do it with the people we're close to. And if we do that as a civic society, you know how much peace we would be in, but we're distracted by the commercial of life. So if you ask, if you ask me how to make a car go fast as a NASCAR engineer, I couldn't give you that answer. Just like I couldn't give you the answer to the other, because it'd be irresponsible. Because I, you know. There's a science to it.
Right. Right. That's real. Right. Well, thank you for